you know, not many times you just, you know, come into contact with, you know, just a superstar in the making, you know what I'm saying?
You talking about you?
No, I'm talking about you.
Oh, man, look, man, you bless me, man. Look, man, I just, if I could just, you know what I mean, touch one life.
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
If I could just, you know, make one positive thing.
But have you thought about how you want to be introduced?
I'll go with Z.
Is that like a family nickname or something?
No, my mom called me Zay. I don't know, though. Like,
what? You go, it's too personal?
It's not that it's too personal. It's just that, like, you know, like, it seems like kind of like a family thing. So, like, a little bit, yeah. So whenever, like, it came up, like, so the sad part about it is, and this is a funny story, you could actually go into it. So anytime I call, like, a pizza place or anything, like, I call, like, order, like, pick up, whatever, you know, even if it's for, like, you know, the family and everything. So I call and call our ID. And she has my call ID name still listed as Zay. So anytime, like, I'm calling, and they're like, okay, so who's this order for? Oh, wait, I see the call. Is this Zay? And I'm like, wait, what? Like, how'd you know that? And I'm like, the first time I heard it, I was like, okay, either, like, I'm speaking to a psychic and I called the wrong line, or, like, my mom is, like, just getting on me. Everybody. Like, she just called every, like, you know, pizza place or something like that. And just was like, hey, call him this.
Just in case you see my baby.
Yeah, I know, right? So it was just like that, but
tell,
like,
me I'm looking for him.
Texas was a failure, but it was apparently an even bigger mess than we knew. A new bombshell investigation from the New York Times reports the incident commander in charge, the school district police chief, Pete Arredondo, showed up without his police radio to communicate. The Times cites a law enforcement official familiar with the investigation. The newspaper reports Arredondo decided in the first minutes to fall back after the gunman's bullets grazed a couple of police supervisors. He reportedly called a police landline from his cell phone to request more backup and said the gunman was contained. Of course, we now all know that the children were trapped inside that classroom with the gunman, cowering in fear, some playing dead, others calling 911, begging for help. So instead of confronting the gunman immediately, like they had been trained since Columbine, police officers held back for more than an hour. As we reported, Border Patrol agents eventually ignored that police chief's orders and led a stack of officers in the classroom to kill the gunman. The Times reports they were done waiting for permission. They continued even after one of them heard a command crackling in his earpiece, "Do not breach."
Yourself. I was born to raise hell. I was born to take pills. I was born to chase meals. I was born to cave in. I was born to... I was born a what a shame. Save my own life just to say yes. Drink it all down just to throw it up. Save my own life just to say yes. Save my own life just to say yes.
King of class. Welcome to the Black Op Podcast. This podcast offers our community a dual perspective of Black people who serve our community as law enforcement officers through thoughtful discussion, debate, and articulation of facts with some reasonable opinion. Our communities are struggling to coexist, and this podcast serves as a bridge to help reconcile these two communities. Be sure to like, subscribe, and follow, and keep up with our page on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter. That track was called Reputation by Post Malone on his album 12 Karat Toothache. Mic check, 1, 2.
My mic sounds welcome.
Oh, my mic sounds nice. Check one.
He caught it.
I used to use one of that. He's one of my calls. Mm. All right. So welcome to the Black Cop Podcast. This is C-Dub with my man Zay.
He had to use it. Here we go.
It's a dope name, yo.
You starting off.
It's a dope name, yo. You got to use the dopeness for it.
Oh, my gosh.
All right, yo, so welcome to the podcast. Zay is a expert in law enforcement who has at some point probably still provide some type of feedback to law enforcement officials in an official matter at some point in time. Maybe not. You know, we don't know. But Zay has some experience. So let me just pause right here to reset our tone, because we're talking about Uvalde and the massacre that occurred in Texas.
Yeah.
This is news about this event has been, plastered and splattered all over social media and news and everything like that. And I, for one, am not trying to rehash the ins and outs of the details of that moment, because I feel like we can use a break from that tragedy. I don't want people to have reoccurring trauma and nothing like that. But I do want to answer a question that I've gotten since this event has actually occurred, and that is, how did this chief, when he got on scene, how did he determine that this was no longer an active shooter situation, and this was now a barricaded subject hostage situation? So my man Zay here is an expert not only in things law enforcement, but also things tactical. He can provide us a very good expert opinion on matters pertaining to active shooters and barricaded and hostage scenario. So, Zay, let me be the first to welcome you to the Black Cop Podcast.
Appreciate it,
man. The goal of this podcast is simply to educate our community members on things policing, because apparently, and for some odd reason, I don't know, but there's a huge knowledge gap, you know what I mean, between what we do and what people see us do.
Yeah.
And what our policies and rules are. So if you want, just, you know, introduce yourself and kind of go into like what your understanding of what a barricaded subject is, or a hostage situation as opposed to active shooter situation.
Yeah. So just introducing myself, you know, I've been a part, maybe not currently, of law enforcement for a while now, part of a SWAT team, maybe not currently. So I wouldn't necessarily call myself an official like expert. It's not like it's been titled on me, but definitely experienced in those certain matters there.
Well, you weren't the person that was actually like holding people hostage or anything like maybe I should leave that part out.
Yeah, there. But like what you said at the very beginning is actually like very powerful with and hits home with a lot of police officers, if I may say, especially when it comes to, you know, the news, like you said, plastering and putting it everywhere. Like a lot of officers that you may encounter, a lot of them, like, you know, when people come up to them and talk to them about certain situations that may happen around the world, they're like, hey, did you hear, you know, about this to happen, you know, the other day, you know, in Texas or California or right. something. And it's like, hell, do you know what I go through on a day-to-day basis? Right. Like, yeah. And
yes, I did.
Yeah. Like, I mean, but part of it is like the perception that I feel like is a big thing with a lot of people. And that's one thing. When I was officer, I tried to go ahead and work on anytime I encounter, or had an encounter with someone. It's that, you know, on day to days, I may come into contact with people, you know, who are having the worst day of their lives. And, like officers, you know, run into these situations to where, you know, these like, you know, regular civilians may not see this in their whole entire lifetime. And it's things they may see like 3-4 times a week. So when we get off work and we come home,
you know,
I'm not trying to turn on the news and see, you know, what happened someplace else. I don't want to see nothing. I don't want to see nothing. Now, don't get me wrong. Okay. Don't get me wrong. Like, you know, Bad Boys, that's my
different
thing.
And The Wire is different.
That's my thing. But I'm not going to, you know, make it my purpose and sole mission to when I wake up in the morning, okay, let me go ahead and turn on the news and see, you know, exactly what's going on around here and all that.
I need more tragedies.
Yeah, I don't need that. I don't need that. My family, my immediate circle needs my mind to be clear. Mm-hmm. You know, they need me to be focused in on when it's family time, it's family time.
Right.
And that's it. When I come home, I'm off work. I'm not carrying work with me.
Right.
So my girl may wake up in the morning and everything. She'll cut on the news and just see, you know, what may be going on around the city or something. I don't make it my purpose and, you know, sole mission to go ahead and do that. I don't. But with that, going into the tragic incident, and you know, it is like I said, tragic that this had to happen, and that we've had so many incidences like this just in America in general, and in such a short time frame, you know, here like, you know, Uvalde, Philadelphia, like all of those just, you know, just back to back on a repetitive basis. And I'm not a political person, so I'm not going to jump into that at all, because then we'd be here for a while.
Well, yeah. Well, let's actually, speaking of that, what's going to the, you know, the definitions you understand hostage negotiation and barricade subject to be as opposed to active shooter?
Yeah. So barricaded subject, if I can break it down, if this is an educational thing, I'll just break it down in an example.
Yeah. And that's good. Just to give you a heads up, like part of the podcast is we want to start off at least with an educational perspective.
Yeah.
And then we'll start throwing in some opinions about it. We might debate about it a little bit. But like ultimately the goal is just to kind of like at least let people inform people first and foremost about what happens in law enforcement.
Yeah, most definitely. So, the easiest way I can explain a barricaded subject and an example. Officers respond out to a, let's say, domestic call. And as soon as officers get there, they knock on the door. The guy inside, he yells at them from outside, opens up a window, says, you know, I have a gun. My kids are in here. My wife is in here. If you all take any step closer, I'll go ahead and shoot them. Then that's when we have a hostage situation or a barricaded subject. In my experience, that is generally when the officers on scene will make initial contact or attempt to make initial contact. It's all dependent on the supervisor. And then from there, the SWAT team will be called out. Hostage negotiators attempt to make contact and do whatever we else need to go ahead and do to handle the situation. Now, with that, the difference between that and an active shooter. Now, an active shooter, as an example, officers respond out, almost same situation. Officers get on scene, and as they are pulling up, they actively hear shots firing from inside the house.
Mm-hmm.
That incident is completely different from a barricaded subject, because at that point, officers are required to take immediate action to go ahead and stop any loss of life that is occurring. So that is the basic example that I can go ahead and give in reference to those two words.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I think that goes into a lot of details, because there are some elements that there's certain differences, certain elements that go into what separates the two. And so just to get a little technical for those who appreciate the technical answers that I try to give every now and then. An active threat is any incident which, by its deliberate nature, creates an immediate deadly threat or presents an imminent danger to the community, whether it's a firearm or any other instrument or weapon. Can cause a defender chooses to make an effort to cause mass casualties and harm. The threat is actively engaged in killing or attempting to kill people in a confined or populated area. So that's active shooter. So just to give you an idea. So I guess what we're looking at now is like, so, and I this is a Monday Mortal. I'm not trying to Monday Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, of course. No. You're right, because when it comes down to certain situations like that, the biggest misconception with a lot of people when they see these things, and this is why I really don't like the news so much, mm-hmm. is because all they do is Monday Night Quarterback,
right?
And they completely pick on the immediate details of how an officer responds to absolutely any and every situation.
Exactly.
And in certain situations, what they don't realize is sometimes those are split second decisions mm-hmm. that you have to go ahead and make. And some of those are life and death situations. And if you put any ordinary person in that situation,
it's not an easy decision.
Exactly.
Well, with that being said though, you know, I disagree with that chief's decision. I think that given what we know and understand about policing, what we know and understand about the situation that was occurring, mm-hmm. I understand if officers were in a situation where they were in the building taking cover, mm-hmm. trying to figure out a more tactical approach to, you know, eliminating the threat in that moment. Mm-hmm. But it definitely was not the best decision. And I think from what I gather, from the information that we gather, the chief was, because there was a standstill and because there was a moment of, or a pause in the, and from the killing that shooter was, you know, carrying out in that moment, mm-hmm. I think that chief interpreted, okay, let's reset, mm-hmm. you know, try to negotiate, hold what we got, take whole, you know, perimeter around the subject and try to get him out and try to, you know, get him out of there instead of going directly in and potentially causing more harm. Yeah. But I think what we realize is that in that moment, you know, as in your scenario, you brought up the domestic mm-hmm. and how, you know, one thing is that, well, in that scenario, no one had died yet.
Yeah.
You know, there were only threats, even, you know, the more legit, they probably were legitimate threats. They could have been weapons of all, but they were just threats at that moment. And then there's also the concern of, you know, he's already demonstrated a willingness and a means to kill and do harm. So not only has he killed, like sometimes just the willingness and the means of doing the harm is enough to make entry and turn it into a, you know, a more tactical moment. There aren't too many real clear answers, but I just want to give the audience an opportunity to hear the difference in the decision making. There's clearly an active shooter. There's someone who's engaged in gunfire. There are people who actually are dying and need medical assistance. And if they don't get that medical assistance, they may die. And more importantly, you know, the matter needs to be resolved before more death occurs.
Yeah.
So I think that Do you feel like, you know, this chief was covered fairly, you know, in this matter? Or do you, because I agree with the conclusion myself as far as how it was not the best decision. Mm-hmm. Do you think that the decision process was covered fairly? Because I think a lot of people have questions as to like, well, what's the difference and how could he confuse the two? Like, is it even conceivable, you know, that he could have, is it reasonable that he would have came to the decision that, okay, this is now a hostage situation?
So it's a lot of factors that you have to take in any type of tactical situation. And by no means am I defending any type of, like, you know.
No, we already established that. We disagree with this.
I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, I get it. But I don't want you to get it confused.
Yeah, but the decisions that were made and the incident itself were clearly shifting between an active shooter situation and a barricaded subject situation.
Yes.
So, like, just to do like a quick breakdown of like the timeline and everything, just in case anybody hasn't heard it. So the shooter arrived at the school at 11:28. The teacher who had, you know, heard shots called 911 at approximately 11:30. The shooter walked into the school parking lot at 11:31, and the shooter entered the school at 11:33. Mm. All right. At the time, he had shot at least 100 rounds inside the classrooms, which the original news report came out that the teacher had left the door open. But what they're saying now is that the teacher had closed the door, except the automatic lock failed, which is just kind of thrown off to me. Like, yeah. I really haven't known that. And this is why, like, I bring up the news thing again.
Yes. Yeah, that or the confusion as to what actually happened. Like, how do you mess that up?
Exactly. So at 11:35, and this is what I would call like proper procedure when it's going into responding to an active shooter situation. So I don't want anybody to look at this and say the whole entire like incident was a failure.
Yeah.
Which it wasn't. This timeline is a perfect example of it. At 11:35, three police officers rushed to the door to confront the gunman. And in the process of, you know, them firing, several officers were grazed and wounded by the gunman, and then they retreated back. Mm-hmm. So just that immediate response and inactive shooting, which I'm also an instructor for. Consultant, you know.
Just happen to know.
Yeah, absolutely. You're instructed to go ahead and stop the dying. That is the first course of action. Mm-hmm. If you can take the shooter's focus away from the killing of innocent people, mm-hmm. then you were doing your job correctly. Mm-hmm. I've told many people when I was working, I have a vest, you don't. Yeah. I have a gun, you don't. Mm-hmm. My job is to get in between that person and you, mm-hmm. and make sure that you don't get hurt at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Because one of those rounds may hit me and I may be good because I got the vest on. It's going to hurt like a mug.
Right. Right.
But I may be good, but I can still go ahead and I have a ability to go ahead and fight back.
I have an increased probability of survival.
Exactly. So, the big issue that came up when the news had put it out was the issue of when the students were calling 911 while officers were on scene. Mm. So that's where I feel like, you know, that type of resentment towards how they handled the situation definitely impacted, mm-hmm. you know, the decisions that.
And it's earned in that moment.
Oh, very much so. Yeah. Very much so. So to continue on it, you know, police continue to arrive and student calls from inside at, you know, 12:03. Now, if I can, like, you know, fast forward a little bit, you know, Border Patrol arrives on scene. The student calls again. The school announces there's an active shooter at 12:17. Another student calls, and then this is where we transition from a barricaded subject because shots weren't heard anymore into an active shooter, because then it says the gunman fires again, and authorities say he was believed to be at the classroom's door when they heard three gunshots. Mm. So at this point, that's when the chief came in and then gave his approval, you know, after, you know, SWAT had arrived on scene and all of that, to go ahead and go in and handle the situation. Now, the gunman began firing per the timeline at 12:21. Mm. The chief gave the order at 12:46. Mm.
So they were at a standstill anyway.
You got almost more than 20 minutes
of nothing.
Mm. And that's where my disagreement comes in, because even then, now from a tactical standpoint, there's a lot to consider. So when you enter that, your whole entire like prowess is to go ahead and like I said before, stop the dying. Like, stop the dying. That is the immediate goal. Stop the dying. Mm-hmm. So when SWAT is called to any incident, like, you know, if it's a barricaded subject, you have time to plan. Mm-hmm. You have time to, you know, go ahead and make sure, like, okay, hey, you know, let me make sure my officers are good. Let me make sure this plan is perfect. Let's go ahead and handle this with as many, like, minimal casualties as possible.
Right.
Make sure everybody gets home safe, including the suspect. Mm-hmm. Let's make sure we handle this, like, professionally good, make it clean.
Right.
But when you have a situation that's rapidly evolving, that's continuing. Like, you know, it's like, you know, 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, 1-2. It's hard to go ahead and, you know, understandably, it's hard to make those decisions
in that moment.
But at the same time, when you're at that position, that's what you're trained to do.
Right.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So for those 20 minutes, that's where I feel like the public is viewing it as, okay, this is where officers messed up.
Well, honestly, and I'll be honest with you, I don't know that the public understands the complexity of the timetable that you just run over,
mm-hmm.
and how much that impacts and reveals about decision making in that moment.
Yeah.
You know, because if in that moment, as a leader,
mm-hmm.
you may still want to keep this as an active shooter scenario. But if your people who are in the building have been at a standstill for, you know, 20 minutes,
mm-hmm.
you may be wondering, like, well, what else can I do to, you know, resolve this matter? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, granted, I don't think that's the best decision, but in that moment of trying to make a decision, is like, well, how can I, from, because this chief is probably at his command station, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? He's initially doesn't have his radio, and he's probably, you know, when he's getting updates from others, he's probably around somebody else with a radio though,
yeah.
and he's getting updates from others, hearing what's going on, and they're probably outside, like, you know, wondering either why you haven't made contact, or maybe they're even telling them not to make contact, mm-hmm. and now they're trying to think of different solutions to render this matter neutral.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, and it makes me wonder, like, well, how do we get to the point where there's that much time,
mm-hmm.
between the initial contact,
mm-hmm.
and when he decided to make a call to go barricade the subject? Yeah.
So like what I was talking about before, like the tactical aspect of it, is okay, they didn't have a key to the door,
mm-hmm.
so that's understood. They had no way to officially make entry into the door. I believe they were waiting for like a custodian or something like that to arrive on scene to go ahead and get, like, give them entry. But with that, officers are also trained on breaching tools,
mm-hmm.
Like very, you know, thoroughly trained on breaching tools and how to breach a door. There were plenty of officers on scene. It's hard not to believe that one of them did not have any type of effective way to go ahead and breach that door.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is just opinion. I'm not saying, you know, like, because as I said before, you never know what the incident is actually like unless you're actually in it.
Right.
But with, you know, those officers being there, I mean, that's like I said, almost like over 20 minutes.
And it's not to that point of like not knowing and, you know, what the incident's going to be like until you're there. The goal is not to say what Uvalde Police Department did wrong.
Mm-hmm.
The
mm-hmm.
goal is to let the audience know what a response like that should look like.
Yeah, so I'll kind of give a breakdown of that too. Some of which I don't know if I can break down too much. I think they're still looking into it. But so just with back to Uvalde. So in that time frame, like I said, it's tactical.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to look at, like I said before, all aspects. And in that situation, you being in that position, you have to consider all of those. So, like, let's say officers did break down that door. Mm-hmm. They kick the door in. They make multiple attempts. School doors, I don't know if you've seen them. Them suckers is pretty sturdy.
Yeah, no,
like, you ain't going to kick.
And if that's still
exactly
trim around the
you're
door.
You're not going to kick that sucker in one
frame,
go.
Still door frame.
You know, so immediately upon hearing those shots, if they're like right there, you're not going to kick that sucker in on one go. So like, let's say, for instance, let's say, you know, a big what if they immediately try. OK, we hear gunshots, kick in the door. Boom, mm-hmm. boom, boom. You know, they're trying to make those attempts, and their attempt to go ahead and kick in that door. What if them attempting to make entry aggravates the actual shooter for him to go ahead and continue firing whoever is left in there.
But in that, within that, and like I said,
it's a what if. I'm not saying it was right.
Oh, I said
I'm not saying it was right,
because what we know in that moment is that he was intending to kill and was.
I'm
killing.
Just saying the thought process of like the decisions that you have to make.
How do you come up with the most strategic?
Yes,
you know, approach,
yes, from a tactical aspect. Because from what we've heard, there were kids in there that said, you know, hey, we still got a couple in here that's still alive. Mm-hmm. So those are things that you have to, you know, you have to consider. Yeah. Okay, like when I get into a gunfight in this room, because we have no eyes in this room, does he have somebody, you know, held up like in his arm when I get in here?
Yeah.
These are things you have to consider, you know, when you enter that from a tactical standpoint.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when you hear those shots go off, like you're trained, every shot is a life.
Yeah,
every shot is a life. You hear those shots go off, you make it your mission to get in there. Even if I'm kicking in the door, if me kicking in the door takes away your attention from shooting somebody else, then if you shooting at the door towards me is taking away your attention from shooting these innocent people, then I'm doing my job correctly.
Right. And that's what it should look like.
That,
and,
exactly.
And me going in there with my vest, maybe my multiple vests, given if I'm prepared in that moment, my long gun, my helmet, you know what I mean? Like I am willing to take the risk given that moment. And that's the sacrifice of being a law enforcement officer.
Yeah. So, like the example that I said I was going to give. So in Virginia, in Virginia Beach, which is like, I believe a big tourist area.
I don't know much about that area.
Yeah. I don't know. But,
I heard Pharrell's from there.
For real?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, they had like a concert or something. But anyway.
All right. Yeah, I've gone down there like once or twice, but that's about it.
Oh, you fancy.
Hey, got to treat yourself every once in a while. But yeah, with that, like I believe they had a shooting a couple years back that I'm not going to say mirrored or almost looked like, because it didn't by any stretch of the imagination. But it's one of those incidents that goes from, okay, we have a barricaded subject, but now we have an active shooter.
Mm-hmm.
And they had one not too long ago. Like I said, I'm not going to go into details with it because I think that is still, you know, under some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But officers arrived on scene and they had a shooter who had shot multiple people outside.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, multiple people inside. Mm-hmm. And when officers arrived on scene, they had heard several shots. Now, those shots, I believe, had stopped, but officers still made entry anyway into the building and attempted to confronted the shooter and solved the incident, you know, correctly. Mm-hmm. But with that, it's all on the decision of the supervisor. Mm-hmm. That's really it.
Leadership.
But at the same time, I will say, speaking from somebody who has done this, ultimately, it's on the officer, too.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna lie. Like as an officer, you have to have that mentality of okay, you know, am I gonna go ahead and go in? Am I gonna handle this? And that's why I brought up the timeline of those three officers that initially went in and got grazed. Those officers, you know, without any type of like supervisor, like hey, can we go in? You know, hey, can we do this? They just went in, like, and that's what you're supposed to do. That's your job.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you have to realize, okay, am I going to go ahead and do this because I know it's the right thing, or am I going to sit back and wait for a decision to be made because I want to go ahead and obey chain of command?
Yeah. And I think, you know, as we can speak towards in that moment, you know what I mean? It is also on that individual offer. Are you going to, you know, wait at the door for backup? Are you going to, you know what I mean, set up a spot outside the building, whole perimeter? Or are you going to go in that building to make entry?
And that's the thing. Like,
you got to make that decision. Sometimes you don't have, you can't wait for a supervisor to let you know when it's okay to go in that building and, you know what I mean, and do your best to resolve the matter.
I mean, and we've had a perfect example of it. Like, one of the things that's affected police, like, for, you know, the past like couple years, you know, like has completely changed like police history is the George Floyd incident.
Mm-hmm.
If those officers that were there had obeyed like seniority, not obeyed seniority and was just like, you know, hey, like this is wrong, let me go ahead and step in.
Right.
How would that situation have actually like changed the course of history?
Yeah. I think, or either in that moment, it might not, we might not even know about George Floyd.
Exactly.
If they actually interfere and intervene, duty to intervene is the technical term.
Yeah.
If they actually intervene and made it and saved his life.
But it's incidences like those and incidences like these that it's sad to say define policing instead of the, and again,
well, you know, but honestly, well, let's say, well, but at the same time, because I was like, I don't think policing was defined.
Well, I'm saying.
I think that moment might have, spotlighted.
Yeah.
You know, the continual or consistent distrust.
Yeah.
That communities, especially communities of color, have experienced with police departments.
Yeah, I should have used a different word. Like, it gives that type of perception or that type of look on policing that, you know, honestly, we don't want. Like, I've had countless people come up to me, and it's crazy because the outlook on police officers isn't even on the officers themselves. Like, you may say, like, oh, I don't like you. Okay, you don't like me, but why? Like, you don't even know me.
So you're going to another podcast topic.
I'm just saying.
That's money spent. Put that money back in your pocket, man. Content is the new currency, buddy. Hold on to that.
All right. But no, like, it's just like, circle back around real quick. Like, save your money.
Yeah, you turn.
But yeah, it's just how people look at it and how they perceive it and how that's how they're going to look at police officers. And it's always ever evolving, ever changing. And now that's how they're going to look at, oh, y'all were afraid to go in.
And I honestly wouldn't be mad at that opinion. I couldn't be, because I don't, unless there's more information that comes out that explains what actually went on in that moment.
Yeah.
If it doesn't come out, if you don't share the information to educate and inform people, you can't be mad enough for forming their own opinion about it, even if it's inaccurate, because people are just going to have their own opinions.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, like you said, that's just how they're going to look at it.
All right. Well, I want to say thank you again to Zay. Man, you are a wealth of knowledge and a huge resource. And I'm sure the law enforcement community has benefited from your efforts, man. So I appreciate you.
Thank you for having me, man. I hope I gave a little bit of insight that, you know, helped and educated.
Sure. Yeah, I feel like, and I just want to, that was kind of light. I didn't want to go like deep into, you know,
the actual details.
Yeah. That was kind of light, you know what I mean? I didn't, but if we really wanted to, we could have delved into like the, not just the procedure and policy, but.
Oh, we can
strategy and you know, yeah, but I just wanted to answer a question that I kept getting. Normally, this is my platform for doing that. So, again, thank you, and thank y'all for listening. Check us again. Look for us on your favorite social media platforms, and follow us and like us and share us. Help us make a difference. Peace. Okay. Now we working with it. Boy, face up and baseline, baby. Smart. Welcome to New York City. It's your boy, Young Hov. Chill. Chill. Kanye West on the track. Chi-town. What's going on now? Can I talk to y'all for a minute? Let me talk to y'all for a minute. Just give me a minute of your time, baby. I don't want much. Woo! Let me talk these motherfuckers. Guess who's Bizak? You still smell it in my clothes. Don't make me have to relapse on these. Take it back out the tax in the road. When I was hugging it, couldn't do nothing with it. Straight from the oven with it. Came from the dirt. I emerged from it all without a stain on my shirt. You could blame my old earth for the she instilled in me. Still with me. Pain plus work. She made me milk this game for all it's worth. That's right. These can't with me. I'm calling guts every time. Drag my every time, homie. We make a great combination, don't we? Me in the face, mob. Every time we face off. Face it, y'all. Y'all playing basic ball. I'm on the block like I'm 8 feet tall. Homie, I'm in the drop with the AC off. That's why the streets embrace me, dog. I'm so cool.
But yeah, like there's Zay. That's my mom. Like a couple of people call me like Zeke. But I feel like Z is like, you know, that middle ground. So
I mean, I like Zay, but that's your name, so I'm gonna let you go with it. You know what
I mean?
I like Zay. Hey, I mean, you know, Zay rhymes with gay. You know what I mean?
And that's why we're not using it. See, you had me.
I like to introduce,
until you lost me.
I like to introduce Zay.
No.
Hey.
No. Hey, Zay. See? See? No.
Zay
no.
With
and with that, I'm done.
With the hair wave? Zay with the
hair. Hey, Zay. Like, no. And with that, I'm done.
All right.
And with that.
No. All right. I'm going to be mature.
Z. Okay.